out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Slow Pitch, a podcast that either takes sports movies too seriously or perhaps not seriously enough. We're your hosts.
Sound effect of someone getting kicked in the nuts.
Oh! Sean Williams.
Sean Williams.
And Sal Bandini. Want to wrestle? Brad Etherly. Today's episode is a review of the 2000 classic Ready to Rumble. We have our first guest host, one Keith Dismuke.
Wakey, wakey, hands off snakey.
That's it. That's the rhythm. Yeah.
All right, guys. So
that was seamless. We're like the Blue Angels just flying in at the beginning of this podcast.
So this is exciting. This is our first guest host, Keith. Keith is a good friend of ours from Nashville, Tennessee, who has since moved, as he calls it, back home. To South Carolina, but I chose Keith to be a part of this conversation because he's a huge wrestling fan, as I was back in the day. And so I think that we actually, Keith, correct me if I'm not wrong, we actually saw this movie in the theater together with a couple of other guys.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did. It was you and myself and Rob and Robbie, I think so.
And I remember thinking, 20 years ago that this movie was pretty bad, but also not that bad. And my original remembrances of this movie kind of held up. I was pleasantly surprised in several spots of this movie. I think from the text messages that I got from Sean, he did not agree.
Okay. Well, first off, I don't have the reverence for this movie that you guys may have had. Tonight was the very first night I've ever seen this movie. And I'll admit, I was struggling. And you know, there's several things that I was bringing to it personally. Like the whole Rose McGowan thing threw me. You know, like I saw her at a younger, more innocent age than she is now. And I was completely thrown by that. So that kind of took me out of my game a little bit. Yeah, I have a few thoughts, but yeah, this one was a rough one for me. And well, I should also point out that I've never been into wrestling.
So I, growing up, you know, back when Hulkamania was going on, I was a huge fan, obviously watched the Hulk All-Star Saturday morning cartoon show and everything. But I kind of got back into wrestling right before this movie came out. So in the summer of 1998, I started getting into WCW, who basically made this movie. And, you know, they had Sting, they had Diamond Dallas Page, they had Goldberg, they had Lex Luger. In fact, I went through the list of wrestlers as they showed up on screen and tried to pick out each one that I recognized. And I got 12. I think I only missed one or two. But I know, Keith, were you watching WCW in that 1998-1999 time frame?
I was. And, you know, WCW is, being a big Braves fan, that was always something that came on Saturday night before the Braves games. So, you know, I started watching it really then. And in through in college while at Harding and so forth, I started watching it and kind of keeping up with it. And not until I got to Nashville and started rooming with Robbie Forrester, a good friend of ours, that did I really kind of, because he was a big, big wrestling fan. And so that's kind of when I kind of, I guess, reignited my interest in it. But it was, that would have been 97, 98 when I started, you know, really following it a lot closer. I was watching it earlier on, but yes, about that same time.
So you were watching WCW when Sting had blonde hair and the colorful face paint.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah, this was, you know, before Hulk Hogan came over, before all those WWE, WWF, I don't say has-beens, but people that had been over there prior came over to WCW because they got more money. So I was watching it well before then. And so this movie was kind of made right as the WCW was kind of going downhill at that point. And within about a year of this movie coming out, WCW was purchased by WWF, or now known as WWE, and so basically ceased operations after that. So this was kind of its, I don't want to say its death throes, but this was kind of, you know, definitely on its decline side, that's for sure.
Well, and to give a little bit of history, and Sean, you might just go, you know, use the bathroom or make a sandwich or something.
Next time, if I need any information on wrestling history, I'm not going to Wikipedia. I'm calling Keith next time. Yeah.
So yeah. WCW in 1998 had really just started. You know, first of all, they had Hulk Hogan come from WWF to the WCW, and he started the NWO, the New World Order, which was huge. But then the Wolfpack was created, and that was what just set the wrestling world on fire. And I was a Wolfpack guy. And then the worst thing that WCW could have done was they scrapped the whole NWO, Wolfpack, Hollywood Hogan. They scrapped all of that storyline, and they started kind of going towards getting these celebrities involved in the wrestling matches. You had Dennis Rodman, you had Jay Leno, and then you had David Arquette also. And it was kind of right around this time period that that David Arquette started to be kind of the newest celebrity to be involved. And so they tried to garner some interest in their operation again by producing this movie, and it didn't work, surprisingly.
I'm going to need someone to describe to me Jay Leno's involvement in professional wrestling.
Oh, they had Carl Malone too.
Carl, what?
Yes.
I did read that as a promotion for this movie, David Arquette became the champion for a day or something like that.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Did you guys not know that?
Yes.
I don't remember that. I had stopped watching WCW. And I think
let me tell you a little bit about professional wrestling, guys. Sit down, sit back for a bit. No, I'm just kidding. I Googled that right before we got on.
Well, I just want to say, if you wanted to, you know, kind of what led into a lot of this was actually you have to kind of go back to like 95, 96. Because Hulk Hogan had a television show called Thunder in Paradise. I think Sean would really love to kind of Google Thunder in Paradise. Yes, yes, yes. So I actually saw it being filmed. I was interning with Walt Disney.
Is that the name of his sex tape?
No, no. Oh, this show is so bad. It's great. It's great. Yeah, y'all could do a podcast on each episode. It was just so terrible. It's great. But anyway, no. So that kind of where they would take product from their wrestling product onto, you know, like either movies or television shows, because the wrestlers that Hulk Hogan was wrestling at the time would appear either as friends or they'd make guest appearances on there along with people like Sherman Helmsley from the Jeffersons and stuff like that. But I'll tell y'all about that more. I forgot about that. Tutu.
Oh, no, he was an Amen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Amen. Amen. So, yeah, no, but anyway, I long story short, I was interning down in Walt Disney World at the studios at the time when all this was being filmed down there. So anyway, I kind of got to see it and kind of got to meet some of the wrestlers like Ric Flair and stuff like that, you know, in passing casual. But anyway, that's just that's for another time, another story. Don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, anyways, so let's get to the movie. And the movie is stars David Arquette, and this is our second go around with Scott Kahn. And coincidentally, the director of this movie was also the director of Varsity Blues, which also starred Scott Kahn. And these were like bang, bang right after each other. So they must have developed some sort of friendship off of Varsity Blues. Also the second time that we get to see Scott Kahn's bare butt. So
he's in his contract.
Yeah. If you're keeping tally at home, this movie could not be more year 2000 than it is.
And what do you mean by that specifically?
Well, I mean, besides the style that they all have, I think they pulled from the top singles of the year 1999 to put in to this movie. They had Lit, they had Blink 182, they had Kid Rock. I mean, I was surprised Limp Bizkit wasn't in there.
Well, when you first said that, what I thought you meant was, there was kind of like this string of movies. I think that is Ric Flair texting Keith right now.
I'm keeping it in, baby.
Yeah. it's like you had this string of movies come out. You had like Dude, Where's My Car? And then there was some movie called Tomcats that had like Jerry O'Connor. And you had this come out. So it's like, there was like sort of this rash of movies that just had dumb guys in it, like acting like buffoons. And so Road Trip. There was like, there must have been a focus group or something that said, all right, hey, the kids love Beavis and Butthead type stuff. Let's crank out as many movies like that as we can.
Yeah. So it starts off with Scott Kahn and David Arquette's characters. They're, you know, young adults, they're not teenagers. They've got a job, but they are, you can tell right away that they're just complete goofballs. And the very first, I only want to mention this because of the late, great Randy Macho Man Savage is,
"And I am the entire desert,"
is kind of introduced first. And what a little cameo.
He was the one wrestler I knew.
Was he the only one?
Yeah, well, I'd heard of Diamond Dallas Page before.
"You're going to feel the bang!"
But, I mean, because I was familiar with 80s wrestling with Junkyard Dog and all that stuff. So, but
yeah. Hey, man, look, Randy Macho Man Savage still looked pretty good. It looked like he could go a few rounds.
So you're talking about all the music. Well, of course, this movie was made, you know, WCW was a subsidiary of Time Warner. So it wasn't surprising me that Blink 182 and the rest of those artists were not part of Time Warner, part of their record. And for the lack, there really was not, I was kind of surprised there wasn't as many product placements. Like there was no, you know, Macho Man was there, but there was no Snap into a Slim Jim. That was kind of surprising to me.
I thought I saw a few packages behind Amat Zappa in the store.
Keith, I did not think about that. Like, you're in a convenience store. You have Macho Man. I mean, it's sitting right there. Spike it, man.
Snap it. Yeah. So anyway, so these guys are wrestling geeks. And they are headed to go see Monday Nitro, which was like the main event of the week for WCW back then. And they're going to Cheyenne, Wyoming. They live in Wyoming. So they make the road trip out there. David Arquette's dad is a state. Are you making a milkshake, Keith?
I'm on my back porch, and that's the air conditioner.
Oh. Okay.
It's all staying in.
Oh, Lord. I'm such a redneck.
A macaw. A macaw is going to land on his shoulder. Like,
Oh, man. Okay. So, anyways, they're headed to Cheyenne to see Monday Nitro, and they are excited because Jimmy the King is, I don't remember his last name, but he is He's gonna be there. He's like the biggest guy. He's the heavyweight champion, and they're excited to see him. They're like 100%, you know, his biggest fans. And it's obviously a play on Jerry the King Lawler's name, right? But yeah. Has anybody, and I know that Jerry the King Lawler does not exactly have a svelte body type anymore, or maybe ever. But no. Has anybody ever mistaken Oliver Platt for a professional wrestler?
Well, okay. So this is what I was thinking about when I saw him. I was like, okay, Oliver Platt is playing a Southern guy. If this movie came out 10 years later, you could have slid Danny McBride into that role because he's got the body for it, let's say. And yeah. I think he would have been 75% funnier than Oliver Platt was able to be in this movie.
I'll agree with you, except that as the movie went on, I started to appreciate Oliver Platt a little bit more. I think the movie realized that this is just an absurd comedy, and they started kind of playing off that, you know, and I almost started taking a tally of how many times Oliver Platt said baby, but it was a lot of times. But I also think that they realized that he's not exactly professional wrestler body, and I think that they were just having fun with it. But at first I was like, this is like off-putting to see Oliver Platt try to wrestle other grown people.
Golden Globe nominee, Oliver Platt.
Well, and I thought, yeah, that whoever played his stunt double probably deserved some sort of award because they did a great job.
Yeah, because, you know, you were making what just kind of play off the, you know, his name being King is, you know, a takeoff of Jerry King Lawler, which, of course, at the time, and he still is, part of WWF, well, or WWE. Of course, WCW and WWE are in competition each other at this time in something called the Monday Night Wars, which is just, you know, for viewership. And so a lot of the things that they kind of did in there are in some ways poking fun at WWE, such as, you know, naming the title character King after Jerry the King Lawler, excuse me. And
easy for you to say.
Yeah. and of course, I don't want to jump ahead in the plot, but, you know, the very first scene in the match with Diamond Dallas Page, you know, the owner comes in and tells him, you know, Page, I'm putting you over. I'm going to give you the championship. You beat him up. That is a direct takeoff of a notorious real life event that took place in WWE's history back in 98, known as the Montreal Screwjob. And which is very interesting. It is. But anyway, back on the farm.
This is amazing. This is, Keith, you're hired. So they get to Nitro, and the main event. First of all, this is where I started. This is where I started counting or naming wrestlers, and this is who I got. I'm just going to go through my list. I got Randy Macho Man Savage was the first one. Conan, the ever yes. popular Conan. Arriba la
raza. Yes.
Billy Kidman.
Yes.
Booker T.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Yes.
Goldberg. DDP.
Yes. Yes.
Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
Kurt Hennig. And Keith, yep. I'll let you explain why you love Kurt Hennig so much.
I forgot.
You don't.
What?
What would he do on his way to the ring?
I forgot. What did he do on his way to the ring?
He'd spit his gum and slap it into the
audience. That's right. I forgot about that. Because he didn't do it in the movie. And he hasn't wrestled in 20 years. So, I mean, you know.
I do know Goldberg. I knew that name and that face.
Goldberg, to me, was... he was like the second coming of Hulk Hogan at that time. Like, he was unbelievable. I legitimately would have gone to a wrestling match just to see him wrestle. And I have been to a couple of wrestling matches, but we'll get into that later. I've got questions for you
Okay. Because I do want to talk about the Steen at the end in the convenience store and his attire at the convenience store.
Of course. Yeah. He basically goes everywhere in his Speedo.
Yeah. I mean, well, I didn't see a no shirt, no shoes, no service sign on that convenience store door. But
when he goes to Chili's, he's wearing that Speedo.
Waitress asks for a tip and he like bounces his pecs.
Okay, so Kurt Hennig, Sid Vicious, Disco Inferno, Saturn, and then lastly Sting. I only missed one, I think. I did not get the lesser Guerrero, Juventud Guerrero.
Juventud?
Javier?
Yeah, there were a bunch of Mexican wrestlers.
Keith, give me a history on Juventud. Go.
On the Mexican wrestlers?
I do not trust you on any name pronunciation.
What? Yes. Yes. I have a history of my parents didn't give me the phonics game growing up. So I have to I'm shooting from the hip and I usually miss. So and that's a pastime of Brad to send me baseball players' names and say, pronounce this. Call me and pronounce this.
Especially Hispanic baseball players because he butchers them.
Oh, man.
But anyway, so yeah, there were a group of Hispanic wrestlers who none of them were related, but they all acted like they were all family. And the Guerrero name was a big one. And Juventud was the least of the Guerrero brothers. But anyways, so yeah, so Keith got into Joey Pantolino or whatever. I'm Keefing his name, but he's the owner of WCW. He's the Eric Bischoff of WCW in this movie, and he tells Diamond Dallas Page, you know, let's kill the king, he's done tonight. And they do, and he's also got like all the other wrestlers in on it too, so they all come out and beat up on him. And David Arquette and Scott Kahn are just flipping out. They've lost their minds. And they, after the match, they decide they're going to go find Jerry the King Lawler, not Jerry the King, Jimmy the King, and rescue him. And they find him. I don't even know how they find him, but they find him in a beat up RV. He's wearing a dress and a wig and drunk Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can you explain to me why he was dressed in drag? I never figured that out.
Well, he said he was hiding out from somebody or something that he was like, but that may have been a joke that he was actually just wanting to wear a dress.
Y'all completely okay, living out. You're completing leaving out. I mean, they go from Wyoming all the way to Atlanta, Georgia, in a van full of nuns. And of course,
oh, that's true.
Yeah, we can't skip that part.
And of course, it shows the van pulling into Atlanta, which is the same scene that they would always show in Matlock when, you know, they would be like cut away to the downtown scene, you know, because Matlock was supposedly in Atlanta when he was, you know, in California. So,
yeah.
Yes, this is a good time.
Keith, I love it that Keith has a cataloged shot list of Matlock.
Yeah, this is keeping Keith away from a number of episodes. Matlock,
hey.
Murder, She Wrote, the Father Dowling Mysteries.
Father Diagnosis Dowling. Murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, the nuns. That was kind of a Dumb and Dumber or slash Tommy Boy comedy beat there, like having them sing along and they're kind of not into it at first. And then you cut away to the car going down the road and then you cut back and then now they're more into it. They practically contorted themselves to work a fart joke into that after they got out. Like, I mean, the stretching they had to do, I mean, it's like, They basically wanted us to know that the nuns had been farting the entire way.
Yeah, and they had to write a half a page of script just to get a fart joke in there.
It was like, was that you? No, it wasn't me. I swear. Was that you? No, it wasn't me. I swear. It's like, and then all it that was like, nuns. It was the lead up to the line, the farting nuns.
Yeah. So this movie is not what you would call high class. Hey, slow pitchers. You may not know it, but I just decided to call you guys that. It's probably not great. Hey, guys, you know those spots we did where we talked about Patreon.com? You know, the ones where Sean called me college boy because I tried to say modus operandi? I can say it now. That only slightly hurt my feelings. The truth is, we here at Slow Pitch HQ may have grossly overestimated how much our audience cares about us. Apparently, nobody cares to have a 1987 Topps Bo Jackson Future Stars baseball card autographed by Sean and I. So that's why we're slashing prices. We're going to change the tiers. Caddyshack 2 is still the first tier, and for $1 a month, you can support Slow Pitch, and we will give you a shout-out in an episode. Unless you prefer to remain anonymous. Don't want to admit you listen to such drivel. The second tier, Rocky 3, will earn a shout-out and, wait for it, our autographs on a copy of our show notes. And that's all for just $2 a month. The third tier gets you both of those priceless items, but also you'll be able to access a bonus episode of a completely random movie. That's the Hoosiers tier, and it's only $5 a month. The last tier is a real steal. Ask Paul Gallardo. He's the only one to sponsor us at this level. If you sponsor us at $10 a month, we will record an episode of your choosing just for your ears only. Plus, you get all the other great things from the previous tiers. You want us to review Ghost Dad? Sponsor us at the natural level. It really helps us out with costs, and you get to listen to even more drivel. We really appreciate you guys, and if you can help us out and sponsor us, thank you very much. There are about 20 minutes of a poop collecting truck from porta potties, and they milk every single
chocolate milk it.
Well, Hershey squirt. They get every single ounce of joke they can get out of that truck, to the point where I was writing that. I wrote, poop truck was played up for as many laughs as possible. And as soon as I finished writing that, here comes the toilet paper truck.
Well, yeah, like a toilet paper truck crashes into a poop truck. And or like I should explain, I like just if you haven't seen this movie, the poop truck, they get porta potty dumpings or whatever you call that, and they transport it someplace. And this toilet paper truck runs into the poop truck, and the toilet paper goes streaming out and just lands in the poop. And that was supposed to be like a hilarious thing for us.
Did you not laugh?
I laughed at how dumb it was.
Oh man, I laughed out loud on that one.
Wait,
because it was so absurd.
Well, yes, it was. Hey, just... I will. No argument there. It was absolutely absurd. And listen, hey, I am not trying to be holier than thou when it comes to a good poop toilet paper joke. It just kind of, you kind of saw it coming from a mile away.
I did not. Like I said, I was writing down that they had squeezed every last poop joke out.
Yes, they squeezed every last bit out. Yes, keep going.
And then here comes the toilet paper truck in it. And I had seen this movie, and I had completely forgotten about it. So I thought that was funny. And then, so they basically talk the king into, because he's done. He's bloodied up. You know, he's acting like he can never wrestle again. But they talk him into just giving him one last chance to really just to punch the owner, Joey Pants' character, just give him one good punch. So they get him to the next taping of Nitro, and they've got Oliver Platt sitting on a porta potty, of course. They get him in there, and they do. He comes running out, smacks Diamond Dallas Page, smacks the WCW owner, and everybody's going crazy. And all of a sudden, Scott Kahn and David Arquette are basically the King's manager at this point. And they basically talk everybody into allowing the King to have one more chance at the title and one more chance to redeem his name. And Joey Pants, he agrees to this and on top of it throws in $1 million purse for it as well. And so their job from this point on is to get Oliver Platt in shape. And this is my favorite part of the movie. They take him to this building that's crumbling apart. You hear these screams from the top floor. They walk in, they're all scared, and they open up the door, and it's Martin Landau. Now, Martin Landau is a Academy Award winning actor. He is in perhaps one of the best Hitchcock movies, North by Northwest.
Which I just watched on Saturday night, by the way.
Yeah, what a great movie. Now he's also in Ready to Rumble.
Sal Banditti, want to wrestle?
Paying some alimony or something.
But to me, he stole the show. He was hilarious. He cracked me up from minute one. And it was the best part of the movie to me. He's, you know, like some 75-year-old wrestling coach who just kicks butt wherever he goes. So they get him. He trains them. And what else happens in the movie? I'm not 100% sure. It's a mishmash of all kinds of different things.
Well, and I was confused about, like, Rose McGowan was, I guess, kind of a double agent for the wrestling promoter.
Yeah, she basically was. So she starts dating David Arquette's character, but it's really just to get information as to what they're doing to train Oliver Platt. And so she calls Joey Pants up and says, "Hey, they're training with Sal Bandino," and he sends Perry Saturn and Sid Vicious out to take care of him. And that was okay. I mean, who doesn't love a good nut shot?
Well, there was a montage of them at the end of this movie. So, like, they knew that there was some gold in this film.
That montage was amazing. Yeah. But this scene where they go to beat Martin Landau up is just rife with them. And it was, yeah, I there were so many points in this movie where I mean, another running gag is that the King was married to some girl named Eugenia, which I would have pronounced it Eugenia.
Is that Caroline Ray?
Yeah, that's Caroline Ray. She did a great job. And they have a son. And when Oliver Platt shows up to apologize to her, he sees his son's teeth. His reaction is gold to me. His teeth are all messed up. Anyway.
Yeah.
So she's playing double agent. And David Arquette overhears Rose McGowan. And he's done with her. And then they go back to Wyoming to train. And really, I mean, it was just a chance for them to introduce a bunch of backwards characters and show some girl in a bikini. Because the next thing I knew that they were back at the main event, and it was a triple cage match. And I mean, yeah, all the things that happened don't really matter except that he won. I mean, Sting came out. Sting cracked me up too because he took his job so seriously.
I want to clarify for everybody, this is not Sting, the lead singer of the Police. He was not in this movie. This is a wrestler named Sting.
Oh, believe me, they know Sting.
Yeah. <Okay. laughs>
But he was so serious, so stone-faced, would not crack a smile at all. And I just thought, dude, Sting, you're taking this one a little bit too seriously. But he kind of comes in, saves the day. The King regains the belt, and that's it. It was not a good movie, but it made me laugh several times.
Well, so I was thinking about this, like, because I was watching this movie, like, thinking, this movie's just completely not doing it for me. And I love a good kick in the groin, a good poop joke. I'm not above any of that. And I was kind of thinking, like, there are other dumb movies that I really like the movie Hot Rod with Andy Samberg and the Lonely Island guys. That movie is completely stupid, but I like love every second of it. And I was trying to ask myself, like, is this Hot Rod and I'm just not getting it? Or is it is it several pegs below Hot Rod? My gut reaction is several pegs below, but what do you guys think?
Keith? This is more of just a vehicle to plug WCW more than anything else. And it was at a time when they kind of needed it and it failed. And so I don't think this thing was literally like it was shot over the weekend. It's like, all right, who's got time off? Who wants to be in a movie? All right, you're in. And so it was that kind of thing. And you could tell real quick. I mean, like, for example, where Oliver Platt's character comes in and apologizes to Goldberg in the gym. That gym was like, I've seen better gyms at like hotels and than that, you know, it's just kind of like one bar with some weights, you know? And so, I mean, you know, you could just tell there's just like, it's like, you know, so done on the cheap. But I mean, you know, and that's the reason why I was surprised there was not as many product placements other than 1-800-COLLECT on the payphone. I noticed that one, but that was about the only product placements I saw on there.
Yeah. No fanny packs. I was surprised.
What would have been the fanny pack? What is that?
Oh, the wrestlers all need them.
For whatever reason. They all they need wear.
Yes. They I guess need if you're Goldberg and you're just wearing underpants, you need something to carry your loose change in.
Well, there's no pockets on Zuma pants.
No, it's a phenomenon that all wrestlers wear these fanny packs, and I don't understand why, but they do.
Is that like I've seen that old photo of The Rock. Have you seen that, like, from when he's in college or something and he's got a black turtleneck on and like Z Cavaricci jeans and a fanny pack? Have you seen that photo?
I'm sure I have. Yeah.
If you Google it, you'll see it. And I mean, I'm like, maybe that was a wrestler thing that he's wearing.
It is. It's, I don't understand it, but there was a lack of fanny packs in this movie. No, I think that it is several pegs below a Hot Rod. It's definitely, Hot Rod is dumb, but it's also smart. Ready to Rumble is just dumb. And that's all it's trying to be, I think. And so I'm not trying to defend it by any means. And we'll get into it with the ratings, I guess. But what I think is that for somebody who enjoyed wrestling at this time, and especially the WCW, it probably resonated more. And it may not have resonated at that time with fans because, like I said, yeah, WCW was struggling and they were this is kind of a last ditch effort. And so it did not work. It failed miserably.
You know,
but 20 years later, you can go back and look at it and laugh and you can go, oh, there's DDP, there's Goldberg, there's Billy Kidman, there's, you know, all these guys. Sean,
that buzz you just heard was me texting you the Rock photo,
the fanny pack with the gold chain and the high top cut. The fanny
his
pack.
Thumb is tucked into the fanny pack, which makes it even better. And he's got a braided belt too.
But yeah, so I think that at the time it did not work, but 20 years later, it's kind of fun to go back and watch. Now, Keith, I'm going to ask you this. Who was worse, Billy Kidman or Disco Inferno?
Well, I think at least with Disco Inferno, you got the uniform. The bright clothes and what have you. I mean, with Kidman, you just had like what, a wife beater and jorts, and that's about it. I mean, I was like,
literally denim shorts and a wife beater. He was the worst conceived wrestler. There was no better. Disco Inferno was bad, but you're right. At least he had a shtick, right? It was horrible, but at least he had that shtick. Billy Kidman was, first of all, what kind of wrestler name is Billy Kidman? And then to just come out in a wife beater and jorts, I never understood them trying to push him.
Hey, I mean, the jort look could be pulled off by Stone Cold Steve Austin, but I don't think, you know, Kidman, you know, could pull that off. So
I introduced Rotten Tomatoes has a list of the best 150 sports movies, and there were several on there that we've done already. Surprisingly, Ready to Rumble is not on that list.
Might be on a worse sports movie list someplace.
But I also introduced the idea of the IMDb rankings for sports movies. And I just want to go through all the ones that we've done so far. Okay. And I'll do them in reverse order. Coming in at 746. Not Caddyshack 2. Fast Break.
Yeah.
Coming in at 483, The Air Up There.
Nice.
351, The Babe.
Okay.
325, surprisingly, Hoop Dreams.
Wow. Man, I think that's cruel.
I think these are based on like fan votes. So if your average fan is watching Hoop Dreams, they're probably not going to get it because that was 325. 320 is Caddyshack 2.
What? That is ridiculous. Caddyshack 2 is above Hoop Dreams. That is, yeah, someone is like high voting on that.
Okay, so number 261, The Best of Times.
Okay.
Which was edged out by number 243, Air Bud.
So people are just messing around with it. People aren't taking this seriously. This list means nothing.
No, because wait to the end. It's actually being taken fairly seriously. It's just that these are your casual viewers, okay?
Yeah.
241.
Number two is The Sandlot 2.
Yes. Number 241, Ready to Rumble, our feature presentation.
Okay, so Ready to Rumble is listed like 100 points better than Hoop Dreams. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. 221, Fever Pitch.
All right.
That's 189, one. Glory Road. 120, top 120, Cutting Edge.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah.
So
there's a Hallmark movie about a yeah.
Topic. Look at you. Yeah. Look at you, Keith.
Yeah, if there's a Hallmark movie about a croquet player, top 10.
Getting into the top 100, 79, Cool Runnings.
All right.
61, Varsity Blues.
Okay.
And we have watched three of the top 10 already. Number six, Rocky.
Yeah.
Number four, Moneyball.
Yeah. Number one. Hey, what was, before you say number one, was Moneyball ahead of Rocky on the other list too?
Let me see. I think it may have been because Moneyball was 13, Rocky was 15. Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams a little higher at number 14.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, to me, part of it is my maybe kind of like the affection that you guys have for Ready to Rumble since you were like into wrestling at the time and saw this movie in the theater. As good as Moneyball is, it's hard for me to outrank Rocky with it. But
yeah, and it was outranked, yeah, in both lists. And then coming in at number one of all sports movies, The Karate Kid, Okay. The Jackie Chan version. Just kidding.
Oh, my goodness. I was about to throw a chair. But speaking of wrestling, but yeah, so but the thing I don't understand about that is the Karate Kid, as much as we all love it, it is basically they've taken the Rocky template and just put a high school kid, and instead of Apollo Creed, it's high school bullies. So I disagree with the IMDb list and also Hoop Dreams being like the whatever 400th best sports movie. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is absurd. But I mean, this is also the same website that with all movies, The Shawshank Redemption is number one. So, you know, you take it with the grain of salt that you get with IMDb rankings. Whatever that, I don't even know how the algorithm that they use, but it's not. Keith, behave yourself.
Making another shake.
Sounds like you're driving the poop truck.
Yeah, tune in to imdb.com where you can learn that Operation Dumbo Drop is the number two best movie of all time.
I feel like, you know, this is a sports movie podcast, and we've been doing our ratings. We've been picking out, or I've been picking out, random moments of a movie. The first one was a pretty obvious ranking system with Varsity Blues. How many whipped cream bikinis would you give that movie? But I think that since this is a sports movie podcast, we need to just, and I think it's apropos that we're doing it with this movie. I think we need to make a switch. I think that we just need to just rate how many balls this movie is. And the number of balls that were kicked in this movie, I know that Keith had a running tally. Can you give us the number?
Okay, so there were five scenes in which there were nut shots. One scene had double nut shots. So that gives you a total of six nut shots. Now, that does not include the ending credit, you know, montage, which that was about 20 of them, kind of like rapid fire.
Yeah, you couldn't even count that fast.
I had to watch it a couple times.
pause. All right, so let's go. We normally do a 1 to 5, but since there were six nut shots, we'll go with rating 1 to 12 balls. Sean.
2.
Okay. No more discussion.
That's what I give it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, here's the discussion. Like I said at the top, like I wanted to watch this and have it just be a dumb movie that I laughed at. But yeah, it was, I couldn't get in the headspace of Ready to Rumble. And there's a lot of factors. But yeah, it was just kind of like they were kind of going to the poop joke and getting hit in the nuts well a little too often. And so, yeah, I give it 2 balls.
All right, Keith, what's your ranking? 1 to 12 balls.
I think I'm going to go with 5.5, probably because because one for each scene that we did get that bit of juvenile entertainment, and the half is because one of them said their uncle was missing one, so there it gives you a half. So that's where the half comes in. So,
You know what? I probably laughed at this movie more than any of the other movies that we've watched for this, to be honest with you. I don't know if that speaks well of me or ill of me, but I did laugh out. I laughed out loud when Oliver Platt threw David Arquette in the RV and he threw him up against the upper portion of the whatever that is. And he just fell. I mean, there were a lot of moments where I just kind of laughed and I thought it was funny. And yeah, so I'll go. I can't go 6 balls. I'll go 4. I was going to go 6, but I can't. I'm going to go 4 balls on this one. Not a great movie, but apparently better than Hoop Dreams. So now we will move on to the next movie that we will watch. We have 204 movies in the queue. We will go to the sports movie Wheel of Death. And we will find out what the next one is. It is number 197. Okay, I think this is an old one. I'm going to have to look up. This may not be the easiest one to watch, but I am going to see. Okay, so this one, okay, here we go. This one is called Kid Galahad, and the original is from 1937, and it's got Edward G. Robinson and Betty Davis in it, and it's about a boxer. So I think, but they also did an Elvis Presley remake, which is also in the queue. So I think that what we should do is anytime we've talked about this before, anytime an original or a remake comes up, we'll do the original first. So we'll do the 1937 version of Kid Galahad. This is going to be the oldest movie by far that we've seen so far. But you know what? The 30s had sports too, so we gotta include it in the list. So yeah, 1937's Kid Galahad will be our next one. So again, if you have any comments, if you want to, you know, make your support for Keith becoming a permanent member of the crew.
Hey, my vote is in. My vote is in. Hey, I don't even care about the air conditioner or the blender or whatever, him making margaritas over there. I don't even care about that.
The cicadas in the background.
Yeah, the cicadas. The 24-second delay on his mic, whatever. It's all good. It is all good. Bring Keith back. Bring Keith back.
So you can... You can reach out to us on Twitter. We have a Twitter account. It's at Slow Pitch Cast. And until next time, we want to thank you for listening to Slow Pitch, where all of our uniforms are singlets. Has anybody ever worn a singlet?
No. I have wrestled, though.
Yeah.
Keith, how many singlets do you own?
No, what?
He's denying it.
At this time, currently? No. No. I've got one on now with the strap hanging down one side, you know, because, you know.
That's why the cicadas are so loud.
All right, guys. Well, it's been fun. Thanks, Keith, for joining us.
Yeah, please come back.
No, thank y'all. Right. Appreciate it. Will do.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to...
Hey, Brad, you may need to... Sorry. You may need to let us know how long she's going to be sitting there. Keith's about to say wakey, wakey.
Yeah.
Eggs and bakey. Okay. All right. All right. 5 seconds starting now.